Today, Canadians will have yet another chance to possibly hear the full story behind the scandal that has completely changed both the image they have of their prime minister and the landscape of the coming election. So will they? No, probably not, for a whole bunch of reasons. If you want to know how things are really going in Ottawa these days, track down your grade 7 civics textbook. Flip it open to the section densely packed with the arcane rules of parliamentary procedure, and then realize that there are tens of millions of dollars worth of politicians and lawyers and advisors and pundits and editors all trying to decipher the implications of the same damn stuff that they ignored back in middle school. And most of them are screaming at each other while they do it. Welcome to the SNC-Lavalin scandal part, I don't know, part 36? The part where the opposition asks again and the government refuses again, and we all wonder how the hell Canadians will actually get the answers they want. And as it turns out, there are a few ways that that could happen, whether Justin Trudeau likes it or not. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Cormac McSweeney is the Parliament Hill reporter for City News, for Rogers Radio, and for The Big Story, too.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well, except that this is the scandal that won't go away, and something new is about to happen today. What's going on Tuesday in Ottawa?
Well, the Ethics Committee is meeting this afternoon to discuss the SNC-Lavalin affair. It's the second committee that's going to be taking a look at all of this, and the Conservatives have put forward a motion to basically launch another investigation into this affair after the Justice Committee probe was shut down by the Liberal majority on the committee after hearing from several key witnesses in this controversy. On budget day, the committee decided that they had heard enough, that they didn't need to hear any more testimony on this, and they were going to move on without coming to any sort of final report. They just let sort of, you know, these witnesses air their stories and left it at that. And so now the opposition is pushing for more testimony, more witnesses. They're also calling for the prime minister to further waive privilege in all of this so that they can get the rest of the story, if you will. And so that's what we're waiting on, to see whether the Liberal majority on this committee, and since they're a majority government, they have a majority on these committees, whether they will allow another investigation after shutting down the first one.
Why would they? I mean, not to be partisan or anything, but like if they shut it down on the last committee, what is going to change this time?
Jordan, if you're a betting man, the odds would be against the Liberals actually allowing this investigation to go through. And if their lines from the last committee investigation and the reasoning as to why they shut that down will be used in this one, then you can expect the Liberals to just simply say, look, we've heard everything we need to hear. We think Canadians can make up their own minds about what happened. It's time to move on. The former attorney general had the chance to fully tell her story on whether or not she was pressured into all of this. And that's that. So I just imagine that they won't, but we'll have to wait and see. You can never fully predict something in politics. Right. And this controversy is proof of that, because I don't think last year at this time anybody could even have had the idea that we'd be in this situation right now, discussing the Liberals' polling numbers dropping, the Conservatives well ahead of the Liberals over a controversy that, had pitted key Liberal cabinet ministers against the Prime Minister's office. I don't think anybody could have predicted something like this. So where we go from here, who really knows? The odds are against the fact that the Liberals would agree to this ethics investigation.
What does a committee investigation typically look like anyway, and how typical or atypical was the Justice Committee one?
They often are related to public policy issues and right, not sort of surrounded by controversies like we're seeing here. So it is unusual in that sense, where it's not a common occurrence where we're having these major scandals that committees are investigating. But the committees are an avenue for parliamentarians to investigate things like this, especially when there are serious allegations such as what we have here, that the Prime Minister's office was putting improper pressure on the Attorney General to make a specific decision in a case that was before the AG. The allegations are serious, and where you fall on after the testimony, I mean, I guess it all depends on who you believe in the end, but they're serious enough allegations that I think it was appropriate, and even the Liberals agreed that it was appropriate that the Justice Committee look at this topic.
So the Justice Committee investigation was ended, and the Liberals said at that point that essentially there were no stories left to tell. The Conservatives won an ethics investigation because they say there are still stories left to tell. What don't we know? Because I know Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott have both spoken about this, but the Conservatives want them to talk about other aspects of the affair.
The order in council that was given by the Prime Minister to waive solicitor-client privilege and cabinet confidence to allow Jody Wilson-Raybould and others involved in the allegations of improper pressure to freely speak about all of this, that only applies for the time that Jody Wilson-Raybould was Attorney General. So in relation to the SNC case, once she left and was shuffled out of the justice file, she basically couldn't talk about what happened when she moved to Veterans Affairs. And on that shuffle day, that's where the story ends. Both Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott, another minister, she was Treasury Board President. She was involved in that shuffle, decided to quit cabinet because she had lost confidence in the government's handling of the SNC affair. But both Jane Philpott and Jody Wilson-Raybould say that there is more to the story. And Philpott spoke recently with McLean's last week, saying there is much more to this that needs to be told. And because the order in council that granted the waiving of all the privilege only ends when Jody Wilson-Raybould left the Attorney General's position, there are still questions about what happened after that. What was said after that in conversations with the Prime Minister between Wilson-Raybould and Justin Trudeau or others in his office, such as Gerald Butts, his former principal advisor, because there were questions about that. Jody Wilson-Raybould did say that she thought that she was being pushed out of the position because of the SNC decision. All conversations that happened after she left that position, she can't talk about. And so that's the big question mark over this. What else is there to say? And we still don't know. The only way we will find out is if we hear from Jody Wilson-Raybould or Jane Philpott, if she decides to talk about this. And, you know, the question now is, will we hear from them? And what will we hear from them if they decide to speak out in any form?
How could they do
because,
that?
So there are many different ways that they could. We could have another order in council from the Prime Minister's office that extends the waiving of privilege to go beyond Jody Wilson-Raybould's time as Attorney General. So if the Prime Minister decides to do that, you know, that would give her the free and clear. Because as a lawyer, as Attorney General to Canada, you're essentially the government's lawyer, and solicitor-client privilege means that discussions around things that are not allowed to be made public can't be made public unless you get, you know, the permission of your client, which in this case would be the government and the Prime Minister. So if he decided to do that, that would give Jody Wilson-Raybould the chance to speak, possibly Jane Philpott as well.
What are the chances that that happens, given that they shut down the Justice Committee investigation?
Well, the Prime Minister has already indicated that he doesn't think that there needs to be a further waiving of privilege. He hasn't said it in those exact terms, I don't believe, but when asked about this several times over the last couple of weeks about further waiving privilege, he has come back to the fact that he believes that the former Attorney General, Jody Wilson-Raybould, was able to address all of the issues on the question at hand, which is, was there improper pressure on the AG over the SNC case? He feels that the initial waiving of privilege answered that question or allowed her to tell her full story on that question. She says there's more to the story, but he believes that enough has come out already. He's satisfied with what he's heard, and he says Canadians have heard enough to make a determination about whether or not there was any improper pressure in this case.
So does she have any other options then, if she wanted to get her truth out?
This is interesting because recently there have been more and more calls about what is known as parliamentary privilege. And this is the idea that you can say anything you want in the House of Commons as an MP and you are not going to be held responsible in any legal way for what you say in the House of Commons. I mean, you could get kicked out of the House of Commons, but you can say almost anything. And, you know, they're free from defamation lawsuits. They're free from any kind of legal consequences for what they say in the House of Commons. So with that being said, the question has been raised recently by a number of Liberal MPs who seem to be getting frustrated with this whole scandal, saying, well, why don't they just stand in the House and say what they have to say? If this is so important to the national conversation about SNC-Lavalin and the functioning of our government, then just get out with it. Stand up in the House and say something. But there are limitations to that. It's not as simple as that. When you get up to speak in the House of Commons, there's a procedure here, and you have to follow that procedure. Otherwise, you won't be recognized by the speaker, and you can't get up and speak. It's not a free-for-all. So as much as parliamentary privilege trumps all other privileges, meaning that solicitor-client privilege and cabinet confidence don't apply when it comes to parliamentary privilege and speaking in the House of Commons, they can only speak at certain times. So they could speak, either Philpott or Jody Wilson-Raybould, but let's focus on Wilson-Raybould since she's the person at the center of all of this. She could give a member statement. Every day before question period, members have a chance to stand up and give what's called an SO31, Standing Order 31, which means they have about a minute to say whatever the heck they want. A minute is not a long time. I think she spent around 4 hours testifying, so 1 minute is really not a lot of time to get to the heart of the matter. Another thing she could do is stand up in the House of Commons and raise a point of personal privilege. This goes back to the argument that if it is so important to the nation, and given the allegations that the AG felt improper pressure, standing up in the House of Commons on a point of privilege could be a very valid point to make. And she would have more time to speak at a point of personal privilege if she felt her privileges were, you know, breached in some way through this scandal, which seems to be what she has been talking about since the start, since these allegations came out. So she could do that, but even then, the speaker doesn't always let you just go on and on for 4 hours. The other option that I just want to squeeze in here is the one that could give them a little bit more time to speak, but it might take some participation of the opposition members, which would just make things really weird and awkward, considering these two members are still members of the Liberal Party. But if there is a motion, when you speak in the House of Commons, it has to be relevant to what is at hand. So, you know, if you raise a point of personal privilege, what follows has to be related to that point. If there's a motion from the opposition, and there have been a couple of motions already, so they had the option to potentially speak. If there's a motion before the House of Commons, they could get up and speak to that. Any MP really has a right to get up and speak to a motion that is before the House as a part of normal debate. And then they take questions from the other parties about what they had just said in their statement. They're limited on time with that, though. They could get consent to continue on speaking. And opposition MPs could also share their time. So if they decided to speak, then maybe a conservative MP would say, you know what, I'm going to hand my time over to Jody Wilson-Raybould
to allow
her to have, keep going. So that's one thing that could happen, but that takes some agreement behind the scenes, and it would be rather unusual for an MP of the sitting governing party to strike some sort of deal with opposition MPs to have more time to speak in that scenario. And the final one that could be, but is unlikely, is unanimous consent to make a statement in the House of Commons. Through unanimous consent, MPs can do almost anything they want in the House of Commons. If all MPs agree, then anything's possible. So if Wilson-Raybould says, I have a statement, I want to make it in the House of Commons, I'm seeking unanimous consent to give that statement at whatever time. If every single party and MP agrees and nobody objects when that motion is put forward to the speaker, then they could do that. We'll have to wait and see whether they try to take advantage of that, because there are other avenues that they could take in the meantime to try and get their story out.
With so many avenues and so many people kind of calling for Ms. Wilson-Raybould to speak to what she says is still left to be told. It seems strange to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that the Prime Minister is willing to let this be dragged out so much, as opposed to realizing that it's probably going to be addressed anyway and opening up a way for her to talk. Does that, am I way off base here? Does that not seem strange to anybody else in Ottawa?
From the early stages of this controversy, there have been a lot of criticisms from pundits and political experts about the way the Trudeau government has handled this. The Conservatives argue that the Liberal story keeps changing every day. I don't think that's fair because I think it's not that it's changed. It's just that they only allowed little bits to come out in dribs and drabs. And that kind of helps keep this thing going. And a lot of people were confused about why they chose that strategy rather than just the rip the Band-Aid off strategy. Get it out there. Get it out all on the table. You've got months to go before an election. You can deal with the damage early on. Let some heads roll. And for people who might be responsible if there was any wrongdoing, and then just move on, because that's the, you know, as some political experts have said, that's the way you deal with a controversy like this in politics. There have been some questions about the handling of this from the Trudeau government and whether they handled this properly at all. But now we're in a situation where it seems like every few days or at least once a week, we've got a new thing coming out. Last week before the budget, it seemed like the Trudeau government was trying to put this to bed. We saw the clerk of the Privy Council resign on the Monday. The Prime Minister announced that he was going to appoint a new advisor to advise the government and release recommendations on how they can change the relationship between the government and the Attorney General, which, you know, the big question there is, do you split Justice Minister role and Attorney General role? And then the budget was the day that the Justice Committee ended the investigation into the SNC affair. We've now found out that the Prime Minister spoke with Jody Wilson-Raybould on the Monday about the next steps, and he called it a cordial conversation. So one assumes that he was giving her the heads up about the actions that were happening on the Monday and Tuesday. But then by the Friday, Jody Wilson-Raybould publicly announced that she's going to be giving a written submission to the Justice Committee, complete with text messages and emails, which she had promised to produce, but also some new evidence in her possession. So whenever she decides to submit that written submission, it's going to put this story back in the headlines, and we're going to be talking about it yet again. Not only that, but the opposition has done its work to try and keep this story in the headlines, disrupting the budget by delaying the speech, and then when Finance Minister Bill Morneau spoke, they banged their desks and drowned him out, then staged a walkout on break weeks when it was feared that the Liberals might get a little bit of a break from coverage. That's when all these emergency committee meetings are happening, including the ethics committee meeting that we're talking about. So the opposition has been doing its work to try and keep this in the headlines, despite some criticisms that they went too extreme too fast with the calling of the resignation of the Prime Minister, that they kind of didn't have anywhere else to go. They promised to use every tool in the toolbox, and it seems like they're continuing to do that. And look, we're talking about it. So I guess if that's their goal, to keep us talking about it, then they're achieving that goal, despite whether it was the best way or not, politically speaking, of course.
Oh, God. That means we're going to talk about this till October, doesn't it, Cormac?
Yeah, I fully expect, you know, there were questions about whether there's going to be an early campaign call from the Prime Minister, and that we'd be heading to the polls this spring, not the fall, which doesn't fully make sense in the basic way that...
Speak of ripping the Band-Aid off.
Yeah, it just doesn't make, you know, you look at the facts, the Liberals are polling at their lowest point, I think, in Justin Trudeau's mandate so far. You've got months to go to repair the damage, including the summer vacation, where a lot of Canadians just tune out of the news and then tune back in the fall, where you can kind of reset the narrative again. You know, there are those options out there for the Prime Minister. So an early election call would seem odd, but the Conservatives are pouncing on that speculation and trying to fundraise off of it, saying we need money now. There could be an early election. So the opposition parties are enjoying this because they get the fundraise off of it. But, you know, the Prime Minister's office has been clear, has been asked many, many times over the last year, will there be an early election? They've never wavered from the fact that they said that they're going to stick with the fixed election date that Prime Minister Stephen Harper had put in place of October, although that's not technically binding. You can break it, and I think Harper did as well. So it's not technically binding, but Justin Trudeau promised an October vote. And I think this is going to be one of those issues that the opposition continues to hammer on the campaign trail. So to answer your question, yeah, I think we will still be talking about this in October, regardless of what the election results will be.
Last question. Are these stories from Ms. Wilson-Raybould and Ms. Philpott going to come out some way? Like, it seems inevitable now to me. Am I wrong about that? What's your thought?
Here's the issue. Both Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott have said that they have their concerns and they're very cautious about the issues of solicitor-client privilege and cabinet confidentiality. Now, we spoke earlier about how they could get up in the House and they could say anything they want in the House of Commons and be protected from any legal consequences when they speak in the House because they enjoy parliamentary privilege, which trumps all other privileges and confidences, etc. So they could do that, but they're hesitant to do something like that. Jane Philpott, in her interview with Maclean's, was asked, why don't you just do that? As she said, part of the issue is timing, of course. And we went through that pretty clearly, that there are limitations on how long they can speak. And if they've got another 4 hours worth of testimony, it's not going to be easy to use the House of Commons as the avenue to get that story out. So Philpott, aside from timing, Philpott also gave a very interesting answer about the dynamic in Liberal caucus and her relationship with colleagues, which I think is another aspect to all of this that isn't really focused on. It was fascinating to hear because you don't always hear that. She was talking about how a lot of her colleagues, because again, she is still a Liberal MP and the Prime Minister has given no indication that he plans to boot either Philpott or Wilson-Raybould from his caucus. Philpott has said that her actions and her decision to quit cabinet has created a lot of uneasiness amongst people who used to be closer colleagues in caucus. And she feels that some feel that her motives are not that she's doing something that sort of works against the party. And that's creating friction with people she never used to have friction with. And so she opened up a little bit about the personal struggles that she has in doing what she's doing, but says, you know, she's trying to, you know, do what she's always done, and that is take a moral stand, and she doesn't care about what happens to her as a result of that. But clearly, those personal relationships are taking a toll. For Jody Wilson-Raybould, you know, you have not only cabinet confidence as a concern out of all of this, but you also have solicitor-client privilege. And so there's some caution there because they don't want to break this oath that they made to the country so lightly. Just because people are saying, well, just get out and say it in the House of Commons. There's a very serious oath that you take when you join cabinet where you agree to serve Her Majesty the Queen and to keep all of the secrets that are held as a privy councillor, to keep those secret, essentially. Oaths are not usually easily broken by people who take those oaths. They feel passionately about what they do, regardless of political stripe. So that's something else that's sort of weighing over both Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott about whether they just get out there and tell their story, despite the fact that there is personal privilege. Whether or not we get the full story out of this, you know, there are avenues for both the Trudeau government and for Jody Wilson-Raybould and Jane Philpott to make the decision to get that full story out. Whether they take those avenues is another question altogether, and we'll just have to wait and see.
Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill reporter for City News, Rogers Radio, and us. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head on over to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You will find, if you visit, that this is not the first time we have covered this scandal. God knows it won't be the last. If you want to talk to us about it, visit us on social media at TheBigStoryFPN or at FrequencyPods on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And of course, find us everywhere you get your podcasts. And when you do, please rate us. Leave us a review. We love to hear from you. You can find us on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Sonos. We're there too. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.